This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Vera Payne here live from the NVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. League of Legends Season 9 is winding down to an end, and joining me to recap League of Legends world and to discuss the recent scouting grounds for new talent is Invin Global Esports reporter Nick Geraci. Thanks for joining me, Nick.
Thanks so much for having me. Good to be back.
All right, so when it comes to Worlds, is there anything that you might consider to be an upset?
I think that it's easy to call the FTX win an upset, and I think according to our expectations, like, at Worlds, I think that, you know, like, it does read that way. But really, if you look at, like, if you look at this team, you look at how this team played in China, and you can tell that the group stage was the aberration, right? Like, the group stage was the fluke. The group stage was bad for them. But they really are that dominant team that they were in China. They only lost, like, I think it was like they lost like four or five like domestic matches the entire year, something crazy like that, like something really ridiculous. Because of the way that they play when they are underperforming, they all look terrible because they're very much like the team itself are, they're more than the sum of their parts. So I think that, like, it's easy to say that, like, their whole win was an upset. I will say that I did not expect G2 to lose that series, so you could call that an upset. And I also would say that I definitely didn't expect a 3-0 on either side. That was a surprise. As far as pure results go, though, I know people consider, like, Griffin not making finals, like, kind of, like, surprising, just given how well they played in the second half of Group A. Like, hard to believe the single best group stage day in the history of League of Legends Worlds, right? Like, and just how good they were in Korea domestically, you know, like, I thought that they struggle on new stages. They're young players with not a lot of experience. And yes, Invictus Gaming was significantly weaker than they were as the 2018 World Champions. You know, their power level is not the same, but I had IG winning that series all the way, and so it wasn't surprising to me. So I think Griffin is something that maybe everyone considered an upset that I didn't. And then I think there's something that, like with FTX, where people considered their whole thing an upset, that if we look back, we realize that we were all just like, I was speaking, I guess, for myself only. I think that we were maybe a little too quick to judge them on their group stage performance. And also, again, the team plays a funky way of League of Legends. It's not the shy and rookie, like, styling on these solo lane picks and, like, going completely crazy around the map. Like, they're a funky unit of players, but they're effective, and that's why they are the best team in the world. They played their style better than anyone else played their own style, and that's what matters.
Now, there are some salty conspiracy theories out there as to why G2 had lost, and a lot of people can't help but to say, man, G2 may have thrown the entire game for FPX for whatever reason, and a lot of that is because FPX is full of rookie players, and G2 is not known to just get rolled like this. I mean, it was a 3-0 sweep. Do you think there's any ground for this kind of conspiracy theory?
No, I think that there's some things that could maybe be playing into that. One, like you said, like, G2 lost that series convincingly after being heavily favored to win. People, myself included, were basically considering FPX an afterthought, like, just whoever beats, you know, G2 versus SKT is the real winner of the tournament, basically. So I do think that there was some factors into there that it was just very incredible, like, how one-sided it was. And another thing is that G2 did not play their best game. Like, I think they all admitted that. They would admit that now. You know, not to make any excuses, Perks was not feeling well, you know, and, you know, they didn't mention that, but he wasn't even at the post-game press conference. They were not trying to make excuses, but I know for a fact that he was not at the post-game press conference after the 3-0, and he wasn't at the pre-game one the day before because he was feeling a little under the weather. That might have played a factor. But I think really the main thing is that FPX was just, they were just kind of like this glove. It was that if FPX can play their style better than G2 can play their style, it's just a direct counter because G2 is so good at playing to any player. Like, all five of those players can carry a game on the right pick, right? But FPX is a unit. Like I said, they're Voltron. The five of them make some single Megamind player of a team, and they have so much cohesion all around. Like, you saw G2 doing what they do best, which is getting priority in lanes and then sending Jankos to the right place to exploit them and snowball that out of control to where the entire game is completely won, like, within 10 minutes, which he does all the time. But every time Jankos did that, FPX had one or two more guys there. Like, Dwindy was there before Caps was. Crisp, like, the best support in the world right now, just was showing up in top lane for answers. Like, absolutely, just very intuitive, but really just the way that this team plays is they are always doing the same thing. They're always on the same page, and it's like, it's why, like, the team plays around doing B, and he can be their super carry, but that's the cool thing about them is that he can also just play these tank picks like the Nautilus mid and enable the rest of his team because everyone is so on the same page. It's like a hive mind with FPX. And so I do think that G2 losing so one-sidedly was a surprise, but we've seen the passion with this team. We've seen, like, the passion with the organization. We saw Carlos choking back tears doing the post-game interview when they lost. He was so frustrated, so upset. I can't imagine a universe in which this game was thrown in any way. I do think that in game two, G2 was down by a lot of gold and then just kind of said, screw it, we're already down like 8K, and then they kind of like hard-ended. But because they were trying to win fights, and frankly, like they weren't going to be able to slowly bleed out. So like while that might have looked like anything to some people, I think it made sense in a way. Like they had already lost that game, and I think they just wanted to get to the next one. And like we've seen them do that with games before. They don't stop fighting. This is G2. So I think it's weird, like, for everything that we know about G2, people to be saying this. I think it's just that they can't accept that like G2 was bested, and they were. And that's why they're pissed. But that's what's great about this team. Like, I think they are genuine, and I think that they're, you know, I don't think they're going to make any changes. I think this roster of five comes back and is stronger next year. And I think that's a really exciting prospect, because that's what we should be focusing on.
Okay, so what I'm focusing on is new skins. When can we expect the championship series skins for Fun Plus Phoenix?
I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, it was like I know that, you know, Riot's had some of the internal discussions, at least the preliminary ones with the team and stuff. But, you know, this, like, you know, the IG skins, like, came out, like, kind of relatively quickly. But there was a year where we had SKT skins that went through a couple revisions that took a while. So there's no, like, actual, you know, hard set time for them to come out. I would assume before MSI, certainly, you know. But, I mean, there hasn't been any specific timeline given, per se.
Now, I never noticed, but is it the last game champions that get a skin, or does the player get to choose the champion?
It's often a collaborative effort. Obviously, the player has a say in it, and as the years have gone by, the players have been more and more involved every year with, you know, like, for example, the 2016 SKT team that won, all the back animations are their dances, you know, like the actual people, like the players made those dances themselves. We'll see like a combination of what the player wants, but also like what defined their world's play. I know Faker wanted an Ahri skin in year three because he loves Ahri, but Ahri wasn't played and Faker's Syndra was monstrous that year. So that's the kind of thing where I'm like, it's a case-by-case situation, but obviously the players are definitely involved in the choices and they get a say, but, you know, the design and everything else and all the input also, it has to be probably something they perform well on at Worlds, or something they were known for. I want a Join B Worlds Nautilus skin. I know that Ryze is a Sayer champion, but like, we have Faker Ryze skins, we have a million Ryze skins already. Give me Join B Nautilus, please, and give it to me now.
Yes, I was thinking Nautilus or Rumble. Either one, I'll be okay with.
That would be cool, too. I would be fine with the Worlds Rumble skin. I think we already have one, I don't remember, but I don't care. I like Rumble as a champion, and that game specifically was insane. I was like, this isn't going to work. I mean, I understood the methodology behind the Nautilus pick, but then Rumble, and I was like, this isn't working, and then like, he got like 13 kills in like 20 minutes. It's insane. So, and that was the cool thing, too. People were like, oh, he's just a spunky player who can only play like utility picks, and the team just carries him. Like, no, he is the carry. Like, he just carries in unique ways, and he does have that hard carry here. He doesn't own weird champions. He doesn't play the Akalis of the meta and the best champions. His only meta champion really is Ryze.
That's true. I think he really knows how to play his champion. I mean, Nautilus, he can't do a lot. But if you understand your counter picks and understand the champion itself, they're going to think you're at a disadvantage. That's not true, because you know your champ. That's what it shows right here. And I thought that was pretty cool at Nautilus. But I want a Nautilus skin or a Rumble skin. Knock on wood, we get one of those.
Certainly hope that, obviously, first and foremost, all the players are happy with their picks. But I do have to be a little selfish. You know, Doinby, he did have some weird tank picks mid, too, like the Malphite and stuff. But Nautilus was not one of them. Nautilus has some innate tankiness. And yes, he was building resistances with all of his AP items, but that was a mage Nautilus. He had Proto Belt, he had Zhonya's, like, he was doing damage, and he was making these big impacts in these team fights and making these early roams, taking advantage of Nautilus's great base stats early on and his shield and his kit to build damage early and snowball the rest of the map. Just a truly, like, unique way to carry games. Like, I went from, like, a non-believer of FPX to, like, I want to study the way Join Me plays League of Legends for the next, like, 2 months. Like, you know, like, it's fascinating. He's such a unique mid laner.
Jumping to the newest patch, or the next newest patch, is Season 10 Changes. What are your thoughts about Season 10?
As far as, like, what we know so far, Rise of the Elements, you know, is kind of the theme of the new way that League of Legends is going to function. That means that we're going to have, like, a lot of different changes, random aspects of the game, like, which Dragon spawns is, you know, those are going to have even more of an effect on the map, so to speak, right? So, for example, when we get our different dragons and stuff, we're going to have different rifts. Like, we're going to have the way that Mountain Dragon spawning is going to affect the way that, like, the way around how things are played, and it will have an actual impact in-game. Now, while that isn't interesting, you know, it's very interesting idea, and I don't think it's necessarily bad, but it will be different multi-thing, just because it's going to make the already randomized effect of what Dragon spawns, like, even more impactful. down not just the dragon, but, you know, it's affecting the actual terrain around the dragon pit, which is a huge, you know, part of the map for all types of activity, not just dragon fights. I'm so excited for it in general, but one thing I really don't like is that Riot is taking away experience from the bottom lane, and I think this is a way to make sure that solo laners can't just, like, go bottom. Like, we've seen Yasuo, like, tear up the bot lane lately, right? And I don't really mind that, but it looks like to me like they want to make sure that people can't scale as much, but that's really just making the role itself weaker. It doesn't really seem to be a band-aid fix that doesn't actually solve anything. And really, the only real drawback of the new State of League of Legends is that bot lane has kind of lost its identity, and, well, anything you play down there, and that's kind of fun. Like, it's what makes you do so awesome to watch, right? For instance, in the mid laner, you can play mages, like a badass. And if you're a world-class mid laner, you can also play Marksman. It's insane. But, you know, it's also worth being said that the actual core identity of the thing is completely different now. You know, and I think that it's kind of lost that a little bit, and that's a problem that needs to be addressed, and this is not the way to do it.
I don't know. I like the way they did the map. They have the little cul-de-sacs in the top and bot lane now. I see the potential in top lane, but not so much in bot lane. I don't know why they made so many changes down there. I hope it doesn't break the game, because it seems kind of weird, you know?
I get where you're going with that. I mean, I totally forgot to mention those map changes, by my mistake, but top lane ones look good. They make sense. But, like, another thing is, like, we don't know what type of playtesting the bot lane went through. Like, this could look weird to us at the naked eye, but what if, you know, the way that the elements have changed, you know, the dragon pit and the surrounding area, maybe the way they playtested those without more alterations in the bot lane showed a lot of imbalance. So I think it's, like, it's definitely something that's going to be difficult and ambitious, but that's kind of how Riot approaches every season. They have these things that are difficult to balance, and everyone questions whether they can do it. And more often than not, it ends up being at least mostly okay. So I think that, you know, we're just going to have to see things play out a little more before we can completely decide. I think there are a lot of new factors that definitely are, like, you know, put cause for concern. But also, you know, the reason why League of Legends has stayed around as long is because Riot continues to take risks and innovate and change their game year by year, season by season.
Now, one of the things I'm curious on your take is kleptomaniacy. They're changing it, or are they taking it out completely in Season 10?
The story right now is that they're changing it, right? Like, I mean, it's going to be something weird, like, where you can have, like, some strange combination of randomly different rune keystones. So instead of it being kind of like a gold funnel machine, and people have issues with how that works. Like, you know, it's like if you have like kleptomancy cannon against a melee top laner, you can just get like 1,100 free gold at 10 minutes just by, like, you know, auto attacking after your abilities and stuff. And I guess it's not necessarily a problem, but kleptomancy is certainly a difficult ability to balance. We've seen how weird it is, and it is kind of a strange sort of almost like a black sheep of runes. And that being said, I think you just remove it entirely. You know, I'm not sure exactly how it's going to work, but you're basically going to have access to different keystones at different times. I don't see that being functional in a way that matters. You know, maybe it's like a for fun thing, but it's like, again, this is adding more RNG to the game, and like, yes, some random factors are good, but like, this one really doesn't make a lot of sense, and I don't like it one bit, if I'm being honest with you.
I think it's not going to work either, and unfortunately, the one champion that's going to be affected the most out of everybody is Ezreal, because kleptomaniacy was his staple. That's his main rune set. And you kind of broke Ezreal. I wonder if this is going to force them to look at Ezreal's kit and have to redo him, or if they're going to just do something else. I'm hoping for them to fix his kit, because Ezreal's kind of garbage right now, and he has so much potential. I love playing him.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I do think that's true. Like, there are champions who benefit from kleptomancy but totally have other options, right? Like Vladimir, Jace, Kennen, just top laners for some examples, right? But Ezreal is the kleptomancy pick, right? Like we've seen Gangplank able to go from kleptomancy to Grasp the Undying, but like, you've never seen another rune set. Like, Ezreal is the quintessential kleptomancy champion. So I don't know what that means for his future, but he has been a staple in the meta for a while, and a lot of his, I think he's also been difficult to balance when he's been too strong, mainly just by certain picks with Yumi.
No, yeah, you're right. I'm hoping something happens to Ezreal, because he needs it. That's my boy. I love all his little talks and the way he moves, and I think everything about Ezreal is just perfect. His personality, but his rune set and what you can put for him is just garbage. I mean, nothing really works for him. Kleptomaniacy was it, you know?
Yeah, it's the one thing that really kind of works for him and helps him get through that early game and get that gold quicker. So it'll be interesting to see if, like, we just completely see Ezreal disappear for a while, or if there'll be a lot of changes, or like another softer rework or something like that.
So here's a champion I want to have your take on, Senna. What do you think of Senna so far?
I can't evaluate her power level right now, because I'm not sure if everyone's super good at playing her. But my initial thought is that she's pretty freaking good, if nothing else, just because I think her Shroud ability is, like, ridiculous. It's like the Akali ability for your teammates, you know what I mean? We haven't seen things go completely crazy. And the last games that I saw, you know, she wasn't able for Worlds, right? And I actually was at NA Scouting Grounds, so I've seen some, at least, like, scrim-level games recently on the most recent patch, but said it was not enabled because of how recently she came out. So we really don't know. I think we're going to, obviously we're seeing the pro supports, Aphrodite playing a ton of her on stream. Like, people obviously enjoy her, and she does create a unique archetype that hasn't really been explored in this way. We've had carry supports in the form of Pyke before, or even Zyra, if you want to go back a few years, but we never had a marksman support. And it's going to be interesting to see, like, what kind of dynamic that brings into, like, professional settings, especially for me, right? Like, does that mean that now we can see even more melee champions in the bot lane? It's like, oh, well, we have Senna for the ranged poke, so we can play, you know, Yasuo even safer now in the bot lane or something like that, right? I think it really shakes things up in an interesting way. And I guess what I'm excited to see is how teams want to utilize it, if they're going to kind of prioritize, you know, its utility and the Shroud and kind of more of like a defensive, like, range kind of siege pick, or if people are really going to, you know, use it to empower the more hard carry supports we have in the world. Hillisang on Fnatic, Tucson, formerly of Kingzone, now DragonX. You know, are we going to see them empowered to, you know, like, even single-handedly carry games potentially based on how this champion can function? So I think it's going to be really interesting, because it's something that we've never seen before. We're going to see how different people have takes on it, just like we did with Pyke, which was fascinating, because we saw how G2 saw Pyke in a very different way than everybody else, and I think they played it everywhere. So I think it brings a bunch of interesting possibilities. I think we might even see her in, like, the bot lane, like the AD carry role. I don't think it's likely, but it's definitely possible. So she opens up a lot of new possibilities, but I'm not sure, like, as far as, like, how OP she is, but I do think her Shroud ability is kind of insane and can be utilized very well by the top teams. So I think that'll be something to keep an eye on as far as Dallas goes.
Yeah, I've been seeing some people who stream, been playing her, and her ability to scale with her souls is insane. Mm-hmm. And towards end game, she's a beast. She's able to take people out by herself. And I think that in itself, we're going to see her get nerfed really hard.
Yeah, I think the main thing is, like, how many tools she has to get there. Because the state of the game right now is, like, if a team is beating, like, a center team and doesn't play the game properly, they should be able to close the game out before she becomes, like, that extra carry. If she's, you know, able to keep her and her teammates safe, they can just turtle up and scale up and keep hiding in their shroud whenever someone gets picked or whatever, this champion has too many tools to get to this unstoppable point where it's unfair. So I think it's, like, even if we don't see, like, her late-game damage nerfed, we might instead see, like, how many tools she has throughout the game to get to that point, you know? So it'll be interesting to see how they balance her out, but I think it's a little too early to tell right now as far as what she needs or how strong she is relative to the other supports.
No, you're right about that. It is a little bit early, but I love to speculate, because I think Senna and Gnossus would be a great team together. That's just me. I want to try that out so badly.
Oh my god, all the facts, yeah.
I mean, the bruisers could hide in her shroud and go back to the safety of the tower. I mean, the possibilities are endless for what kind of champions you can take with her. Plus, she can heal, and she can poke, and she can help you, like, keep other champions at bay while you go and get your creeps. I mean, I think it's going to be a lot of fun with her, and may change the dynamics of what bot lane looks like.
Riot is making support champions that they fill out unique niches. You know, Pyke, there's never been a champion like Pyke before. There's never been a champion like Yuumi before. You know, we've had elements that are like Yuumi in the form of Janna, Sona, Lulu, whatever, but that's a unique champion, just like Senna is a unique champion. And I think it's good that they're exploring, like, pushing the limits on what the support role can do, especially because I do think that because of the way the game is played right now, supports have a much more agency in the bot lane 2v2. As a carry, you kind of just have to sort of follow up on what your support does for the most part, at least in terms of how the role is traditionally played. And so I do like the support role getting more agency, and obviously different styles of play and different types of players is always a good thing.
Now, I know before you said that you were at the scouting grounds. How'd that go?
It was pretty good. It was a little different from previous years. I've been there the last couple of years, and it was really good opportunity for, you know, these players. They come here and they kind of get a sort of timeshare of the LCS experience in the way that they get to work with professional teams. You know, we had coaches from, you know, different LCS teams helping these different players. There's a mock draft, and those teams kind of play in these best of three matches throughout the week, and then, you know, the actual seeding is decided on the final day, which is on broadcast, so they get to play on the LCS stage and experience what playing on broadcast is like and all that good stuff. And then, you know, just from, like, it's a very unique event in that, you know, it's not, like, necessarily about the competition first, as much as it is about these players getting to learn things, getting a look from these organizations. And, you know, it's a great opportunity for scouting, and I think it's even more important this year because NA failed at Worlds, and a lot of people are pointing to our lack of talent development, especially in the last couple of years. And just overall in quantity, we don't develop the same amount of quality domestic native players that, say, Europe, Korea, or even China does, you know? And I think that, like, a focus on scouting ground is, you know, important for that. But I think that it's also, there were some problems in the sense of, like, it started legitimately, like, 24 hours after Worlds ended. And I think that there were some things that could have been better prepared if given more time. That being said, I'm aware that because of the way that the free agency window works, you don't want to do it too late because then players, like, miss out on opportunities to sign, and there's a whole bunch of conflicts of interest there. So the surrounding context of the event, it was complicated, but the event itself was good. You know, these players, like, it's really exciting to see them, like, learn, like, the difference between being a good solo queue player and, like, oh, this is what it takes to be, like, a competitive player. Because it is, at the top level, it really is a completely different game as far as, like, the fundamentals and, like, you know, the ways to win. It is so different.
Out of curiosity, do you have to be invited to get into the scouting grounds? Or do you just, like, hey, I know it's going to be here at 12?
So the way that people have gotten in the previous few years, and including this year, they changed something this year. I'll go into that in a second. The top five players in each position, so whoever has the most LP at the top of the ladder, would be invited. And then there was also, I think that's what they did for three teams, was like the top three players in each position. And then also there was a face-it, like, invitational in which a team in full who won that tournament would be the last team for scouting grounds. And so we had more than one way to qualify this year, but traditionally it has been climb the ladder, have the most LP. You know, you have to be within the top players. You have to prove yourself. You have to prove yourself on the ladder, and then you get invited. You know, you have to be, like, you know, in the top three, top five, whatever. Like, it's based on the points, basically. So look at the LP and Challenger as kind of the rankings within the East to see who's worthy of an invite, and then that player gets a week of competitive experience.
All right, those who are in bronze, you got a lot of work ahead of yourself to get to the scouting grounds.
Yep.
Okay, so I read that one player, and I could be saying his name wrong, it's Sudsies, he failed a behavior check and was removed from participating in scouting grounds. What is a behavior check?
I'm going to be honest with you, there wasn't a ton said about that specifically at scouting grounds, but there have been times in the past where a player has qualified. Like as far as the details, there hasn't been much said, but there have been times in the past where players qualify for scouting grounds based on their in-game attitude or their chat logs or whatever else, you know, and sometimes all it takes is to have one game where you're frustrated and you flame a pro and you're blacklisted, basically. And it's not about it, like, being unfair. It's that, like, that's more important to people now than just, like, the talent. Like, it's, you know, obviously the talent has to be there, but you have to be someone who's willing to be worked with and receive feedback and not get frustrated, because if you're getting tilted in solo queue, you sure as hell aren't ready for the professional player life at any level.
That is so true. Nobody needs a toxic teammate.
Absolutely, yeah. So, I mean, and we've seen it, you know, teams are less and less willing to give players with a, you know, even a pattern of not even just toxicity, just even being difficult to work with. It's like the game is so team-based now, like, that you have to be talented, but you have to, like, not be a jerk also, you know, and that's a simplification, pretty reductionist version of what the actual issue is. But at the end of the day, if you're not willing to be cooperative, like, no one's even going to take a flyer on you for your attitude. Like, there's no place for that right now anymore. If there's too much money in the scene, there's too much established understanding of certain things about the fundamentals of team play in this game, and people just don't have the time or the patience for that anymore.
Well, Nick, thanks so much for joining me. I appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Nick Geraci. It's my full name, all one word, NickGeraciE. I don't bite. Talk to me about League of Legends or any other esport you like. League of Legends is definitely my bread and butter, but I have talked about Fortnite and a few other things on the show, too. So I'm always down to talk about esports and gaming and this thing that we all share a passion for. But yeah, you can find me there on Twitter, and you can see I tweet all of my work from InVent Global, where I'm a journalist and reporter, primarily of esports, but also gaming in general. And I'm sure you'll probably see me here again. I hope so. I mean, thank you so much again for having me on. You guys have had me on many times, and it's always great to talk with you as well.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's masonverapayne.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.